welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of The Morning Brew with Hunter Drew. We are on episode 49, so we're creeping up on that 50 mark, which is pretty cool. And today, for the first time in these 49 episodes, I have two guests of the same name. I've got the Nates on with me today. We're going to be talking about the taboo topic that is finances. People don't like to talk about money. It gets weird. Parents don't like to talk to their kids about money. It gets weird. We're skipping all that because money is an issue that if you start struggling with money, it's going to affect other areas of your life. And I'm joined by two financial savvy men with repeat guest Nathan Steel Jans of Barbarian Rhetoric and first time guest Nate Holy Shift Dean. So Nate, since you're a first time guest, could you introduce yourself to the viewers?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate that. So my legal name is Nathan Dean. My friends call me Nate. So I just tell all my Twitter friends they can call me Nate too. So I pretty much go by that. I live in Southeast Texas, like about 2 hours east of Houston in a town nobody's heard of. So I say east of Houston. It's easier for everybody. But I am 38 years old. I don't look my age. I've gotten that my entire life. But my wife and I, we've been married for 17 years. I've got four kids and I teach financial education. And then I'm also a pastor of a small church here in Texas. So that's just a little bit about me.
Awesome. And welcome to the show. Now, one of the things when we first came across each other was your Holy Shift program. So we'll be talking about that a little bit, but that's something that people, if they want to learn more about, you know, just stay tuned, follow along, and then Nate will be dropping a link later on, and I'll be sure to add to the description of the video as well. Now to Nathan. How you doing? How's the soap business?
It's going good. It's been savagely clean. It's been going good this year. So it's interesting going into the holidays and seeing how people react, how people spend money. I think it opens up the other side of things. Usually you're just a spender. And this time I'm putting something out there to be purchased and just watch the roller coaster of spending habits. It's different.
What actions have really stood out to you? You know, let's talk about the consumer side of it. Not so much your production.
On the consumer side and leading up to Black Friday is how many people hold their breath across the board. You just everywhere you see people coming and going, but no one's buying anything. Everybody knows there's going to be a sale on Friday. Everyone knows there's going to be sales on weeks. And I think from the middle of the month till that day, everyone just stops. They may go window shopping or whatever, but the traffic's not going, you know, besides going out for the holidays, unless they're buying gifts for like an early Christmas. Thanksgiving, a lot of people will do Christmas with one side of the family or not. But I think beyond that, people just hold their breath. And it's like, okay, what can we get on sale? And then the question is there, are they waiting to get stuff they know they're going to buy anyway? Or are they going to go after things that if it wasn't on sale, would they even buy it? So, you know, yeah, you saved $200, but you spent $8. Do you really save anything? You know,
my wife is notorious with that. She'll go and she's like, oh, this was on sale, so I bought it. I saved $30. I was like, but you weren't going to buy it. So you actually ended up spending $20. Even though you saved money, you bought it something that you weren't going to buy. So I totally hear that.
Yeah. And I think a ton of that goes on. I just avoid the crazy. So it is. It's a different perspective looking at it from that way. Usually, I don't even go out on Black Fridays. The last 2 years I did for FOE meetups, so that was worth it. But beyond that, it's like you don't even want to go out into the insanity of it all because people are just stupid. And you hear reports, there's always those stupid things of people, and it's not as bad, doesn't seem as bad, but it's still it affects people in weird ways.
Nate, what would you say, or what have you noticed from the consumers out there around the holiday season?
Well, I actually have a strong retail background. My dad actually owned an athletic shoe store when I was growing up, kind of like a Foot Locker. And he started in 1989 and ran it up until he passed away in 2012. And then he passed it on to me and my brother. And we ran it for 4 more years after that. And then we finally just shut it down. It was just too much to keep up with because I was 3 hours away trying to run a business. And it was pretty difficult. So I grew up in a retail family. That it's funny because the perception of sales, not the numbers, but the perception of sales of advertising and things like that is actually what drives traffic. And what I mean by that is you could run a 25% off sale on everything in your store, you know, and you might have a decent day. But if you ran a tax-free sale, people would be lining up. I mean, because I think Texas is one of the first people to introduce tax-free weekend. I could be wrong about that. But they started doing tax-free weekend around back to school. Like it was like the weekend before school started, they would do tax-free weekend. And so it was an insane time for us. Insane. But the reality is people were only saving 8.25. You know, I mean, they were saving 8.25, whereas, like I said, you could have been running a 25% off sale and you wouldn't have had a quarter of the people. So anyways, it's the perception of sales is pretty interesting. The whole Black Friday stuff is just it's kind of comical to me that people are willing to sacrifice themselves. It's like there's major sacrifices that have to take place in order to participate in Black Friday in most places. You've got to get up real early or you got to stay up real late. You got to camp out, all these other things. And then you have to risk fighting other people for stuff that, I mean, to me, I don't really care how much money I'm going to save. It's just not worth it. I don't participate in Black Friday. I did. From the time that the Black Friday craze all kind of got started, probably about 10 years ago, my sister-in-law decided that she was going to go Black Friday shopping and she was going to be out there at midnight or whatever. And I told my wife, and she was single at the time. I said, there is no way she's going to be out there by herself. We're going with her. And that was really just for her safety and protection more than anything else. And unfortunately, it wasn't as crazy as it could have been in other places. So, but it's so much about the perception than it is the reality.
It's interesting that we even have to think about this. Like, oh, there's a sale. We've got to go out and make sure our family makes it back safe. Like, come now. Like, how do we hit this point? I do want to shift and actually kind of hone in on something you were talking about, though, which is the emotional response. You know, like, oh, you know, and I don't know if you guys can see the banner, but I also slipped up. We are running a 50% off your first month in FOE. Let me just drop that there in there. But the emotional response people have, you're like, oh, tax-free, I've got to get it. And during Christmas, and we were talking about this before we went live, the topic of money, like people treat money as this weird thing. They're like, oh, I'll throw it at this and that'll give me happiness. Dude, you're going for broke. You know, we were talking about people who are spending money now saying, oh, I'll pay that off with my taxes when they show up. But then when taxes roll around, like, oh, I want a new TV. So now you accrued that debt. And then what you had planned on paying off, it's nice to spend things. It doesn't feel so good to pay off a credit card as it does to buy a TV, though. Now, some people like, I found myself to get into the point where I like, when you start paying down debts, you're like, yeah, like it's like a different kind of high. But you got to kind of find your way to that feeling first. It's like going to the gym. It sucks when you first start, but then you're like, you start to like the pain, you know? So these people don't like the pain and they're spending more than they're making during this season. And how do you think we combat that? I mean, obviously a show like this brings awareness to it, but there are people right now whose families, their Christmas is it. After that, they're like bill collectors knocking on the door, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's sad is it's for most of America, it is a perpetual cycle of maxing out your credit cards in December and paying them off the next year just to do it all over again. And it's just, I mean, it's a perpetual cycle constantly. And you know, if you ask any one person, if, you know, if they have debt, hey, do you want to get out of debt one day? Everybody's going to say yes. You know, do you want to be in shape? Everybody's going to say yes. But the difference between those who are successful and those who are not is, you know, it's going to be painful either way. But the ones who are successful in getting out of debt or getting in shape are the ones who chose to do it anyways. So, the successful people in whatever they're doing, they don't want to do what it takes to win, but they do it. And, you know, there's sacrifice and pain involved, temporary sacrifice and pain involved in getting your finances in order. But once you got that set, or once you're in shape, because I know we all know a lot of fitness guys, the downhill, you know, once you've made it up the hill, the downhill, man, it's a pretty smooth ride. And it takes action of some kind to break the cycle. And that's one of the things that we get really excited about when we're helping families, is because we get to come alongside them and show them, because the number one thing that we teach people how to do is rapidly eliminate their debt.
When you say
I have a business partner, Brandon Goswick. Yep. He's on Twitter as well, but he's not as well known. And he likes it that way. He's fine with me being the face, so it's
you
all
just
good.
Blew up his spot. Everybody's gonna be flooding to him now. Yeah. Found you.
Go follow him at the Goswicks, GOSWICKS. There you go, Brandon. I'm sure he'll love that. But we get to show people how to rapidly eliminate debt while simultaneously increasing their asset column. And it's all done through the teaching people how to properly apply the principle of leverage. And the principle of leverage is something that is foreign to most people, because the taboo of the word usually comes along with risk. But we actually teach people how to apply leverage in their life without risk, which is insane. And we like to say, you know, Dave Ramsey's not even going to teach you how to do this.
Now, Nate was talking about action. What do you think is more powerful? The action of like, all right, you get a bonus, a Christmas bonus, and you just drop it on your debt, or having a system in place to where you're like, all right, each month I put $500 towards this, $100 towards that. You know, some people are going to, when they talk about this, they go to the extreme because this is the online living. So they're like, oh, you're going to be meager and you're going to be like Scrooge and, you know, slice your bread in half for each slice, you know, because you don't have to be living poor to be doing this. So I'm wondering if it's a big action that kind of starts the process, or if it's a system in place where you're like, all right, this is how I'm going to get out of debt.
I think it comes down to what works for who. There's the biggest challenge. You know, some guys have to go to the extreme and just go minimalist for a short period of time. And then you got the guys that can balance it out and make things work for them. One of the things you can do with credit cards is make them work for you and pay you. 99% of the people don't have the discipline to pay them off each month, so that won't work. Last year, I made almost $2,000 off credit cards.
You talking about points? Like
no,
kickbacks are
your 1%, 2.5%, 5% back.
Yep.
You pay those off, you can rack up some money if you pay all your bills and everything. Do I suggest that to people? Never. Why? Because they don't have the discipline to pull that off. So that would go to the thing is, okay, you got this big bonus. How do you work that out over the period of time, you know, to make it work for you? How can you take that money to make more money? But if you're the type of person that you're an impulse buyer or you're an impulse spender, all right, you're better off to take, say, you know, that $1,000 and knock a credit card off and shove it in a drawer and never use it again. That's one of those things you can argue back and forth. Some people go, well, you got to cut all those credit cards up and get rid of them. Well, that depends. Are you planning to go credit free? You know, if you're planning to keep your credit score up and keep things going because you're looking at buying a house or doing something, or you're just even looking at buying business properties, you got to build that credit up. So ditching all of that. But it comes down to what a person is disciplined to do. And then once you can find out what they're disciplined to do and start working, that's where I think people can mold it to fit them. Just like every fitness plan is in a cookie cutter. I think it comes down to paying off debt and business-wise too. Not every system works for some people. You know, they got to – it could be something as simple as I want to save $1,200 this year. Well, I take that $100 and I give it to my brother so he'll hold on to it for me. I can't spend it. You know, that cash money, unless there's an emergency, build up the emergency fund. You got to find systems like that that work for the individual. And there is no cookie cutter way.
No, one of the things that Jim Rohn says, and I quote it often, is, you know, everyone experiences two pains in life, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. And he says, discipline weighs ounces, regret weighs tons. And I tweeted something out yesterday, and a lot of people kind of took it. But what I said was, the pain of discipline is temporary, but the pain of regret can last forever. And this perpetual cycle that people keep going through, I mean, people have an opportunity with a little bit of discipline. People have an opportunity to figuratively change their family tree if they'll install a little bit of discipline in their life in terms of their finances. Because it doesn't take a ton of money to start building a system built around leverage. And what happens when you have that is you had the ability to recover something called opportunity costs, which is the hidden cost of everything that we do. And you start kind of like seeing dollars come back into your life that you didn't even know you were losing. Nobody's going to become debt free without discipline. Because even if they win the lottery, you know what's going to happen? If they don't have discipline, they're going to be broke again
quickly and almost worse off.
This is something that's recently hit my life. So it's a very timely topic to be having this discussion, in that I recently met with a financial planner and he was talking about retirement. What are you doing with retirement? I said, well, I'm not really doing anything. You know, I have a TSP account from the military and a TSP account from when I was a federal employee. I was like, they're just sitting there. I had them in the CSI funds. So it was, I think 80% were in high or very aggressive high risk. And then 20%, I think it was bonds or something. You guys would know better than I, but I was like, I'm not doing anything now. So we sat down, he broke it all. I was like, look, if we do it this way, you know, as soon as you make this money, it goes into that account and that's going to start building that. And I'm taking out the two TSPs, combining them. And now I'm going to start having a new system to where it starts funneling in, you know, just like a little portion of the pay and starts filling that up. And that doesn't feel good. It doesn't give that same rush. Cause you're like, I'm not going to see that till I'm 59 and a half, or if I take it out to help the kids with education costs. But it's one of those things where I never planned. And I think a lot of people, you were just saying that it doesn't take a lot of money. I always thought like you have to have $25,000 minimum to be able to throw at something to start investing. Or, you know, you see these people online and you're like, oh, I can't afford, you know, to drive the Lamborghini. You know, people to be like, oh, I can't afford the Jeep. You know, these things, they're like, I'm just getting my head above water. And to them, I'm like, well, do you have any idea what's leaving your account? You know, how much do you spend on the alcohol? How, you know, that's a huge one for me. When I cut that out, my God, I was like, wow, that was so dumb. Because when you're going out to eat, now your bill is double. You know, when you're over the weekend, if you're grabbing something, you know, a bottle here, a bottle there, that's a lot of money. That in itself can help you get to the point where you can afford the Jeep. You can afford to start putting things away for retirement. So those little actions, I'm wondering for you gentlemen, what little actions like that, like removing alcohol, have you found that like instant, wow, I'm saving $50 a month or something like that?
So for me, this is kind of funny, but you know, my oldest son's 15. My youngest is my daughter, and she's 6. So we bought diapers for 13 years in a row. And when we stopped buying diapers, that felt like a pay raise just by itself.
It's awesome. I know a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, but in terms of you know, cutting things out, when we start working with people, like, we're not looking at how they can free up money inside of their budget. We don't actually touch their budget. We just look at their cash flow and we show them how to maximize the efficiency of everything that they're doing. But what inevitably what happens, because I do encourage people to create a budget, but I'm not going to make
that
for you.
How does that work though? If they work at a 9 to 5, I make this much every hour. How could they make that more efficient or improve that process?
Well, sounds like you need to take his course.
I've been through it. I have. But for the good people.
I know.
A couple of different ways. I mean, one is I just met with a couple on Friday and they had some pretty good cash flow going through, but at the same time they hadn't done a budget in a while. And so they said, "Hey, we've got this amount of money that we can start building on, but let's create a budget and see how much more we can find," you know? So they were going to look and see how much more would be available to them. And inevitably what happens when you start creating a budget, you start seeing a couple different things. When you put it all on paper, you see where this is going, you see where that's going. And then you see where, man, look how much money we're just wasting. So a budget is definitely something that's important. But the other thing that I encourage people to do is, hey, just look for ways to increase your cash flow. We hang out on this side of Twitter where it's all about side hustles and things like that. It is very, very easy to do something on the side for a few hours a week that can generate extra money. A couple $100 extra a month can be the difference in thousands and thousands of dollars later in your life.
That's been our experience, you know, in my family, is sort of whittling away and then adding something coming in. So for people watching, I think the first step would be to print out your statements of we're at the end of the year, so you could do the whole year. But I mean, just the last 3 months, get a highlighter, highlight expenses that are totally preventable. Going out to eat, you know, every week, or for the people who go and get coffee at their work and they buy that $5 coffee every single day, Monday through Friday. It's like, hey man, just make your own coffee. It'll last so much longer. Ground Shark, link below. But it's one of those where that's a great first step. Now, Nate, you have built a business this year. So you've seen the other side of, like, all right, how do you start bringing streams of money in? And when you start bringing another stream, is it dedicated? Like, all right, all the soap goes to this and anything from this product goes to that. Because that's kind of how with Jackie's sales, my money comes in and hers kind of goes to a savings to pay for taxes.
No, mine's all inclusive.
It's all one.
It's so blended together with all the different avenues that, yeah. At some point, yes, I'd like to do that because I think that organizes everything. I'm not there yet. I got to build that cash flow up. It's coming and going. So it's all in one big melting pot just because of how things are currently set up. So I think that's part of the building process. But we're going back, even with a small business or anything, people don't think about all the extra expenses. And there's the challenge. And that's with anything. We can talk business. We can talk owning a car. You can talk owning a house. The initial purchase price is the easy part. It's the ongoing maintenance of everything that starts to rack up. Even when starting a business, if you're doing, anybody can open up a Shopify account, put products on there. But then what are you going to do for shipping? You know, are you going to buy a label maker? What boxes are you going to get? What are you going to do to pack your stuff in? And everyone goes, well, I didn't think about that. I mean, are you setting up a drop shipping store or a product store? And you just started it, and I had big conversation with Kyle Moonlight about a bump this. And he goes, well, I didn't think of that. So you got to think past the process of just opening something up. Or, okay, what's the difference between buying a Jeep and buying a little, I don't know, little Honda or something?
Testicles.
You know, what's the difference between buying a 14-inch tire and 33s? You know, are you going to go spend $500 on tires?
Same answer.
Or are you going to go spend $2,000 on tires? And guys don't think about it. You go buy a big ass truck or a big Jeep or buy a 3/4 ton truck and you're putting, you know, 10 ply tires on it or whatever. You're putting higher ply because you can't put normal radios or they'll just blow out. And people don't look at that. They just look at the initial purchase price. You know, do you need a 6-bedroom house for 2 people? Possibly if you do a, you know, renting out rooms. But people try to live outside their means. You know, you go look at all these mansions, and I chuckled. My uncle, I was working with him on a tree job, and we went into this ritzy part of the neighborhood, and he's like, you got to come see this. And we walked up, and we're talking $1 million home, and they had milk crates with a little black and white tube television sitting on there and a couple of lawn chairs, and that was their front room. They owned $1 million house with the 6 or 7 bedrooms with the Mercedes out front, but he had to charge them cash because he knew their check would bounce and they had nothing in their house. Well, think of what
do you think that's a focus on appearance of looking rich as opposed to actually being rich? Absolutely. Or is that just prioritization of just liking those things more? So they didn't care about the TV, they wanted the nice car.
No, because I can go down to the not so nice parts of town and those guys have nice cars and $10,000 homes. So that I would say was prioritization of it is they want a really nice car and they don't care where they live. Were these? No, that it's full on status symbol of trying to keep up with the Joneses. Where if they didn't initially buy that house and maybe they had bought a cheaper house that they could live in, and purchased a property to rent out or make rental properties or something and make it work for them, they could have turned that money around and then owned the $1 million home. And they don't think about it. They'd rather show this appearance or whatever. And people do that with all at all scales. That's a huge scale looking at the $1 million, but people do that at the low end scale. If all you need is transportation to get back and forth to work, why do you need a $30,000-$40,000 car? You know, if you're not traveling and you have a little bit of maintenance in your mind and you know how to work on stuff. I took a 94 Chevy Silverado and I ran it to just shy of 325,000 miles. Most people don't get cars past 100,000 and they start stressing. I downsized to a little car. Why? Because I knew I was going to be traveling thousands of miles. I needed reliability. So I gave up some money so I could have real reliability because my truck was just getting tired. When I was just going back and forth to work, though, it worked good. So it depends on your circumstances of what you're going after, but people don't think about that. They live 10 minutes from work, buy a $30,000 car, and then rust the exhaust out on it that cost them 10 grand to fix nowadays. So it's a comparison there. And you can take that and apply it to any and every situation of what is your priority, what is important to you, and then make that work for you, but then work up to it.
Nate, for people that go through your course or people that work with you, has there been a trend as to what caused them to get into their financial situation that they're in now? Was it their parents didn't teach them? Was it, you know, I know we talk a lot about how schools aren't teaching these things. Is it just a lack of know-how? And they're like, oh, credit cards, fake money.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest part of it is just the fact that we're not taught for the most part we're not taught anything about how money works in our homes. We're definitely not taught about how money works in our schools. You know, my business partner is a middle school principal, and you know, he is very aware of the lack of education that takes place when it comes to finances, and that's actually something that is on kind of our dream board for the future, is to be able to create curriculum for students to learn how money really works. Because I was a business major in college. I studied economics and finance. Like I should have known the stuff that we teach now, but all through school, not a single professor taught me anything about how leverage works. And it was either because they were told not to, which I doubt. It's probably more the fact that they just didn't know themselves. And so all they were doing is really just regurgitating the curriculum that was given to them. And I mean, this is a little bit of a conspiracy side of things, but our education system is not set up for us to thrive. It's set up for us to be dependent. It's not set up for us to break free from the system. It's set up for us to be enslaved by the system. And something I've said on Twitter before is the ones that choose to keep you in the dark are the ones that stand to profit the most. And once you learn how to actually, in a sense, secede from what everybody else is stuck in, man, it is empowering. And I've sat across people who didn't feel like they had any hope in ever getting out of debt. And once I showed them how they could use leverage and how we could create a custom strategy for them, and with a little bit of discipline, man, you can see hope restored. You can hear it in their voice. They're like, whoa, like I can win. Like I can do this. But it's all lack of education. I think that's the biggest part of it. Once people understand that they don't have to be a Nazi when it comes to discipline in terms of their finances, but they can actually, you know, still apply a little bit of discipline and still win. You know, one of the things that I like to say is, you know, there's usually a spender and a saver in a relationship. What if I could teach you how to build a system where you satisfy both parties simultaneously? That's unheard of, but it is possible. But it takes some education and some context of actually learning from me to understand how that's possible.
And then you have to have them want to learn. There's the biggest one. Anytime I hear in theory, I just want to reach out and just slap them. Because it's like, here's example after example of this works. And you're like, well, in theory. No, it works. And I apply that to several subjects, but finances is a huge one. Well, in theory, that should work. Well, you're not ready to accept it or put the discipline in to do it. Because theory's been proven over and over again to make it, this works.
Money really does bring out the asshole in almost everybody if they don't get it. You know, to what we were both talking about, it made me think of how serious, you know, the crab bucket mentality is when it comes to money. So people that don't know, let's say, how to make money online, they hate people that talk about making money online. You know, the college professor who doesn't know how to run his finances, he's going to hate the student who's trying to tell him, like, sir, we could just do it that way. No, follow the book, because that's how I do it. And I don't want you to break out and succeed, because that means I'm wrong. And like, money makes people super sensitive.
Yeah. Well, and Nathan, something you said about pride, you know, I actually tweeted this out this morning. You know, if you're not too proud, you can learn things that will change your life. But there's something that we teach and talk about is the arrival syndrome. And it's where we tune off or tune out the idea that there's actually something better than what we've been taught our entire lives. And so we've been indoctrinated to this kind of one line of thinking. And the truth is there's things out there that we should have been taught, like I said earlier, that we just never were. And I have made connections in the past year. I just celebrated my 1 year anniversary on Twitter the other day. I made just incredible connections in the last year, you know, some with some really big accounts that were fortunately willing to drop their pride. You know, even though they've got a big account, you know, they've got status, they were willing to drop their pride, and we're working one-on-one, you know, and they opened up to me about everything that they're doing, you know, how much money they're making, all this other stuff. And because they were willing to do that, now they're on a path to far exceed their expectations as far as the trajectory and where they were heading previously.
And that goes well with when we were talking about step one. You know, so what you can do, when I was talking about printing out the itemized state, your bank statement, you know, going through, it's like you have to be, it's like there's two people inside you. There's the you that's like, hey, everything's fine. You're like the dog sitting in the room with everything on fire. You're like, this is fine. You know, and then there's another part of you that's totally aware of that dark mountain that's coming behind you. And I think that leads to a lot of anxiety and a lot of the issues a lot of men, family men, you know, are facing is they're pretending everything's fine, but they know their finances are just like insane. And so they're trying to just stay ahead. You got to stop. You got to turn around and just face it head on. All right, print it out. Here's how bad it is. But once you know how bad it is, you cannot work on it. You cannot have a plan of attack because you know your enemy.
Well, and there's a lot of little things. It took me years, and I was teens. I know I was in my late teens, and I was working with my uncle, and he's like, something you have to watch out for is that you don't spend a dollar to pick up a dime. And that took me forever to really register in my head. I mean, if you're just walking along and you see a dime, why not pick it up? But if picking that dime up costs you a dollar, you just lost 90 cents. And a lot of people look at it and go, time to money or whatever. But how many people have you heard that go, we're talking about sales during the holiday season, but even grocery stores or whatever, they'll entice you in and you'll drive across town burning up a ton of gas to go save 20 cents. Not thinking about the gas that you just burned in your car to go get that 20 cents, where if you went to the local store, yeah, you may have paid a little bit more, but it's still less than the gas you spent. And people don't think in those terms. It's like, well, I go here because of this. Okay, well, they had this big sale. Well, what did it cost to get there? Or I want to live here. I mapped out where I wanted to live because I figured out how much gas I wanted to spend. And moving up, I moved from one city to another in... Drive-wise, I cut it in half, but I reduced it by 2/3 in mileage. So I can will go up, and it's time to money, and people don't think about those little things. Or my favorite, and I kick myself on this, I'll be like, I'll tell the little man when we're out to the grocery store, he'll want something. I'll be like, nah, it costs too much. It's not on sale. Because one, I'm like, you know, you got to figure out what things are worth and everything else. So I'm trying to teach a little lesson. But then we turn around and we go out someplace and we just spend a buck on a drink or something. So we save 10 cents, but then I turn around and show them and it's like, okay, what's your perceived value? You know, why are you willing to spend, you know, $2-3 on a drink, but you weren't willing to spend 10-20 cents on whatever food, even if it's good or whatever at the grocery store. And it's little stuff like that that add up over time. And if you can learn to recognize what you're doing with the little stuff, I think that expounds into all the larger purchases.
So since you mentioned gas, I'll kind of shamelessly plug this. So I've been, for the last probably couple of months, I've been sharing on my Twitter, which is @ChroniclesNate. There's this gas app called Get Upside that I've started using. It's a free app, and they've got a network of gas stations that offer like certain discounts. So you open up the app and you see if there's a gas station close by, and then you go there and you'll save, you know, a few cents a gallon on a tank of gas, which is pretty cool. But there's another element to it where if you share it with someone and they download the app, then you both get a 15 cent per gallon bonus off of your first fill up, which is pretty cool. So what happens is, you know, I'll tweet it out. I'll share it, you know, for anybody who wants to go download it. And those 15 cent gallon bonuses, they actually stack. So you can go look. I think I retweeted it yesterday. I don't know. It's on my timeline somewhere where I put it out there. The last time I filled up, a couple days ago, I saved 92 cents a gallon at the pump.
So being a Jeeper, that is like a symphony to my ears.
You know?
Yeah. Go download the app. I'll send you the link or I'll tweet it out again here in just a little while. But download it and see if there's a station close by, because what was really cool for me was even being in a small town where I am, when I downloaded the app the first time, the gas station that I frequent the most was actually on the network. So I didn't even have to change my habits at all.
There are a lot of programs like that too. For us, we have Stop and Shop up here in Rhode Island. And I forgot we even did this. So did Jackie. So every time we buy anything from Stop and Shop, which is where we'll do some grocery shopping, you get like points towards the gas station. And you just go to a Stop and Shop gas station. So the other day we checked it and it's 40 cents off. So it's not 92, but 40 cents off for doing nothing. I did nothing but bought food.
Yep.
So
right.
Little things like that add up. People, there's a way to start saving little things of money. You know, you can stop the bleeding a little bit. So that's less I'm saving on gas, you know, while doing nothing out of the ordinary. You know, that's something I really want people to take from this episode is little steps.
Not changing anything out of the ordinary. There's the key point. You don't have to change anything. It's just part of life. You have to take advantage of it. You know, how long had you gone not doing that? And here you have all these points added up, and it's simply, well, we'll stop and hit this gas station. We're already here. You don't have to, well, I want to wait till I'm all the way empty. Why? You know, if you're here, come back. And you don't disrupt anything out of your normal life. So it's just, you add it in there. I usually do the same thing with Kroger's here. You know, get the discounts, get the change. But I'm already there, so it's easy. As I'm leaving, pick up gas. It's no disruption. And I think a lot of people will be like, well, I don't have time for that.
You don't have to do anything.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, one of the things I said earlier is when we're working with people, like we're not looking at their monthly budget and trying to say, hey, you need to cut out this, you need to cut out that. We're looking at their cash flow situation, what they're already doing, and we're just showing them how to redirect that money into a way that's actually going to benefit them. So, you know, what you could build your emergency fund, your short-term savings and your long-term savings simultaneously, you know, all at the same time, you know, just by redirecting that money. So the money that would be going to savings, which if you have money sitting in a savings account, Robert Kiyosaki says savers are losers, because when you have money sitting in a savings account, that money is going backwards. It's not doing anything for you. So why not take that and put it into something that is safe, it's guaranteed, but it's going to create cash flow for you over time. You know, it's actually going to be moving in the right direction. So just like you said, we're not changing anyone's habits. We're just showing them how to make it better.
I'm thinking about the guy who's working his 9 to 5. You know, he let's say he makes, I don't even know what, keep it simple, $1,000 a week. So he's got a $48,000 a year job, or 44, whatever the hell it comes out to. So he makes $1,000 a week.
52,000.
I can't do math right now.
It's 52 weeks. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I couldn't do it on the fly. Anyways, he's got credit card debt from making bad decisions. He's got a bunch of student loans, and he's thinking of like, all right, I can't make any more. I'm staying at this job, you know, and I'm struggling. So what you guys are saying isn't making sense. And you get this pushback all the time in all realms. The two things that I throw out quite frequently, one, we had a guy inside FOE have an idea. He's like, I'm a really good mechanic. And I've got all this knowledge and I want to help people learn about how to buy a used car or how to sell a car as well. You know, what to look for. I was like, dude, that's brilliant. You know how many people that would help? Why don't you make that a PDF and put it on Gumroad? And you know, and he did. 3 days later, he has a product. And now I don't know how much he's making, how much it's selling, but it's selling. I bought it and I don't even need the damn thing because you want to support people. Mm-hmm. So the it was instant. I have an idea and now I'm making more money. And to something I said earlier about using total incomes on things, he could set it up. He could make a system as to where all the money that comes from Gumroad each month, he drops onto this credit card and he never sees it. It doesn't change anything, but now new money's coming in. It is so easy nowadays to do a PDF. Jack Murphy shared about his kid wanting a new computer. So he started shoveling, you know, these side jobs. All right. People love to marry their current jobs. Get a new job. Start working on the resume. Put the resume out there to make more money. You know, there are things that you can do to get out. It's not a life sentence to be poor. It's not a life sentence to be in debt. It can be broken free. You just do something.
Yeah. Something that you just said that reminded me, I was having a conversation with somebody, Friday, actually, a new client I'm working with, and he was saying one of the things he was telling me, and it's something most people are just completely unaware of. If you have a, let's say, $200 a month credit card payment due each month, and you did start a side hustle where you're making $50 a week or, you know, $100 a week or something like that, if you start sending that to your credit card as soon as you receive it, what you start to do is actually get ahead of the interest that would have been calculated at the end of the month.
Yep.
So you start to eat into the interest that you would have been paying if you would have just waited 30 days to make those payments. So for somebody, I mean, if somebody was just listening to this and they didn't care about, you know, learning from me or working with me or anything like that, I would say if you're making little chunks of money and you're working on tackling debt, start doing it, you know, bi-monthly, you know, or bi-weekly or whatever, throw in that money at that debt, and you're going to cut into the interest that they would have charged you.
That's well said. It's very obvious, you know, when people are facing debt, you know, it's very obvious. Like, they know it, they know it's there. And again, Anthony said in the chat, you know, increased awareness, you know, that's why I wanted to have this talk, because people don't like to talk about it. So that's the things that people hate to talk about. I'm like, we're bringing this in the show. You know, we're going to send this one out. We're going to share it every time somebody's talking about, oh, I don't have any money. Well, what are you doing? What are you doing with your money? You know, make your money work for you. You know, start paying it off. Start tackling the debt. You don't have to keep up with the Joneses. You don't need a new TV every year. You don't need a new phone every time a new model comes out. You don't need to buy the new thing every single time it shows up. Like, stop. You're addicted to new things. You know, whether it's the pursuit of status. And I want to give this caveat. People should enjoy life. You know, there's a reason I have a Jeep and not a very fuel efficient, very economical thing, because that gives me a good experience. So if you're going to spend your money, don't do it on things that you don't even give a shit about. You know, if you don't care about video games, stop buying video games. You know, but if you love computers, go ahead, buy that top of the line computer. Do, like, invest in specific things instead of trying to make everything great. Like, for me, we were going to get a bigger house, but I was like, we don't care. Like, our house is where we live. Our family's close. We're good to go. You know, I'm not worried about having the mansion, like you were saying. I don't think I need that. That's not something that's important to me. But if I was a dude who's like, I want a freaking mansion, like, I've always wanted a big house because maybe I came from somewhere poor. All right, go buy that big ass house. But it doesn't mean you need a fancy ass car. So be intentional with what you're putting your money into.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When Nick was talking earlier, he was talking about, you know, the house and everything like that, and people basically living in lawn chairs. So we sold our house last year, bought a new house, and the house that we sold was, I mean, it was pretty much custom everything. I mean, we had a sick kitchen. I mean, huge, massive island, granite everywhere, custom cabinets, stainless appliances. Like, I mean, it's the HGTV yep. type kitchen. It was ridiculous. And the whole house, I mean, we had wood floors and tile, and my wife had a jetted tub, and we had a separate shower. And, you know, I mean, it was just really nice. We had the tankless hot water heater system in the house, which was amazing. I love that. And I'm going to get another one day. But we sold that house, and most people would actually upgrade, you know, to something at least on that same level. But actually, we decided that we wanted more square footage, and we were willing to make some sacrifices. So we bought a bigger house that doesn't have any of the upgrades that we were accustomed to. And you know what? We're good with that. And not only that, we actually spent less money. So we got more square footage for less money, and we got more land to go with it. So I had 3/4 of an acre previously. Now I got 4.5 acres.
That's awesome.
Well, and if you start watching, my neighborhood's strange. There's a lot of starter homes in it. So you have a whole bunch of younger people in the starter homes. But what you're starting to see now is the ones that are retiring are coming and buying the starter homes. They're selling their big houses because they raised their families. They did everything else. And they're like, well, why do I need all this space? And they're coming back and buying the starter homes again. And retired folks are the number one purchasers in my neighborhood that I'm seeing is they're all coming in. It's like the families are buying the bigger houses. The older couple, well, why not downsize? You know, why do you need that big house? If you don't need space or yard maintenance or anything else, you could go the other direction. So depending on where you are, where you're building with your family and stuff, and I think a lot of people are starting to see that. It's like, okay, I can sell this one and pay this house off, and then I don't have a house payment. To me, that's smart. And it's starting off like that. That's the long-term plans. And I think a lot of people just think of what's right in front of their face at that moment, and they're not thinking that distance out. Really, what did all that fancy kitchen get you, Nate? At the end of the day, it's just a kitchen. Okay, it looks like, do you socialize? You know, are you having people over every day that you need all of that? And that's one of those,
I'm not
what you
social.
Want. You know, but it's one of those, if that's what you truly want, what we're talking about here, it's, you know, it's the mansion versus what will work. What are your priorities? And I think that just lays into it, into everything. You can get away with simple and still be very comfortable and happy.
Gents, I think we've talked this to death.
Hey, Hunter, I decided that I'm going to offer to anybody who's watching this a discount on my course, $20 off. So I'm going to create a discount code here in just a second. And it will be Family Alpha, and I'll tweet it out also. So the discount code will be Family Alpha, and you'll get $20 off on the course.
Awesome. I appreciate that. I always like, you know, kick it back to the listeners who are supporting. I'm on your page now. I've got it shared on the screen. I'm just scrolling through. I mean, the testimonials themselves, you know, you can't buy that. I mean, I guess you could technically buy that, but you didn't buy that. These men went through and they're sharing. They're actual. That. No. As soon as I said it, I was like, well, I guess people do that, but you didn't do that. So to make it very clear for people, that is not what happened. Well, but I mean, I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Just look at the very first one, Ed Lattimore. You know, he's not a sellout, and we know that. He wouldn't put his name on something unless he truly believed in it.
Yep. Well, that's awesome. So, Nate, anything you want to leave the listeners with about money, about your course, what they could find, and how they could get in contact with you? Let's say they do want to work with you a little more one-on-one.
So, yeah, you can find me at Chronicles Nate on Twitter. That's my primary social media presence. We have a Facebook page for our business, and then we have a private Facebook group also for anybody who goes through the course and anybody who's a client of ours. But you know, I challenge people on Twitter sometimes that I can teach you more in about 5 minutes about finance. Then you could probably learn in 4 years of college. It's pretty insane. But I've backed it up many, many times, and I have a lot of shout outs on Twitter that can attest to that. In fact, I even created a thread. Every time somebody shouts me out, I created a thread, and I started this hashtag several months ago, hashtag woke by Nate. So anytime somebody shouts me out, I will copy it, and I'll quote it with that hashtag, and then I'll put it in that thread. And if you go to my pinned tweet video and you click on that actual tweet, that thread is the very first listing right there. So if anybody wanted to just go see what other people have said about it, you know, it's all right out there. And for anybody watching, I offer a money back guarantee on my course. So if you went through it and you were like, hey, this wasn't worth it, all you gotta do is send me, you know, just let me know. I'll refund you. It's not a big deal. That's just how confident I am in what I teach. And the only reason that I teach this stuff, because I said earlier, I'm a pastor. The only reason I teach this stuff is because it changed my life. And my business partner and I, we just got excited about just going and teaching other people. So, you know, if you want to connect with me, shoot me a DM. Connection is something. I was joking earlier when I said I'm not that social. I'm actually very social. which is ironic because when I was growing up, I was actually really shy. But it just took me a while to break out of my shell. But once I did, man, I was off to the races.
I'm shy too.
but I mean, I love making connections. So yeah, anytime somebody wants to reach out to me, you know, feel free to do so. But man, I definitely appreciate you guys and Hunter, appreciate you having me on the show.
No, yes, sir. Like I said, it's just money. So for those watching, look, if you want to take a step towards reclaiming that aspect of your life, you have the opportunity right there and the savings. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. What are you pulling up? Oh, barbaric soap.
Okay. Yeah.
There's the products. I wasn't sure if you're going to pull that or barbarian rhetoric up.
That one with the soap. Did you see the video I put out? Or not the video, the picture of all the soap I have?
Yes.
You guys have me so clean.
That's good.
So people that want to connect with you, support your work, where should they be going?
Oh, we're at Steel Jance on Twitter, Barbarian Rhetoric on IG, and Barbaric Soap on IG. What else do I have? Oh, the blog. There you go. BarbarianRhetoric.com. That's a place. If you want all kinds of information, we got everything coming through there. I'm getting writers from all over. It's no longer just me or a couple of guys. It's growing. Concepts from around the world. I tapping into a lot of the information and highlighting guys there. So a lot of neat concepts, mindsets, different views. And it's interesting that when you start digging into the history and talking to guys, that we're all from different backgrounds, but there's similar threads that run through all the articles. And it's really cool to see that. So that's where I would start. Hit barbarianrhetoric.com, go from there. And then if you want to reach out more, DMs are open at Steel Jance on Twitter. And those are the main avenues.
I just remembered the only negative review of barbaric soap was from my wife because her little lady hands couldn't hold the bar.
Bar?
So if you have man hands, the soap is just great. If you've got tiny woman hands, you might want to cut the bar in half. All the guys in the chat.
That reminds me of the Seinfeld episode. She has hands like a man.
Like my wife's hands, like I'm 5'8", but like my hands are like paws. And her little fingers go up to like the middle line on my fingers. So she's like, this soap is too big. My son's like, it's fine. So it's awesome. All right, gentlemen, thank you for giving me your time. Thank you for having this discussion and not letting it get weird because people hate talking about money. You know, I hope those who needed to hear it come across it. You know, and if, again, listener, if that's you, take some action. Print out your statements, reach out to one of these men, you know, have that discussion and just stop running from it. Turn around and face that monster and runs debt. Reminder that if you want to join the Fraternity of Excellence, I think there are four more uses of the code half off, which gets you 50% off your first month. Seeing the new guys come in has been really cool. Yes. And it's just a solid community. It's my private group and it's just what we do. You know, we get after it and finance is one of the things we face. We've got a group in there working on building an investing mastermind group at the moment. So it's pretty cool what's developing in there, but it's not just, you know, finances, it's the mind, the body, the spirit. So that's fraternityofexcellence.com. Gentlemen, this is a great way to start the work week. I hope you guys have a good one.
You too, man.